I have to admit, this sermon actually came because of a meme on Facebook. Sometimes those things can be useful, at least I hope so. Did any of you watch Seinfeld? Anybody watch Seinfeld? Do you guys remember the episode where the Kenny Rogers roaster sign was outside Kramer's window? And how stressed he was about that thing? You remember he comes in and he's like, "Oh, I'm stressed, Jerry," you know, because that sign was always flashing in his room. And this meme said, 2020 and 2021 be like Kramer. And he comes in, he's like this. How many of you feel that? You a little stressed right now? People feel a little stressed right now? There is a great passage in Philippians chapter 4 where Paul tells us how to deal with stress and anxiety. And so we're going to look at that passage today. Now, I freely acknowledge that this probably is not as easy as Paul makes it sound. There is a process in this text which has to be followed. It's not as simple as just one day. If you've been stressed your whole life, because there's one thing that my wife hates when she's stressed, if I just tell her, just relax. There is nothing that irritates a person who is stressed more than some unstressed person looking at them going, just relax, just chill out. That just makes them more stressed because they want to kill you. Okay. So I hate when people get up and preach sermons and pretend like, wow, if you just quote this passage, everything goes away. It's never quite that simple. But there is a process here which if we kind of incorporate this into our lives, we will see a change. But again, you have to incorporate the process, and that's an important thing. Now, I want to, before we get really into the text from Philippians, is remind everybody that this church is located in the place where Paul and Silas have been thrown in jail and had been singing praises at midnight as they were cuffed to the floor after they had been beaten. So I just want to throw that out. We'll visit that text in a minute. But Paul starts, this is in the final chapter of this letter, so this is kind of the last page of the letter. Paul writes this to the church in Philippi, a persecuted church. He says, "Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice." Now, there is a really important element of this text. I think a lot of times when people read this, they go, well, it says rejoice, but I don't really have that much to rejoice about because right now life's kind of stinky and I don't really feel like I've got anything to rejoice about. And I think it's important to note that Paul does not just say rejoice here. He says rejoice in what? In the Lord. Now, if you did not see if you were not here last Sunday or you weren't watching online and you didn't hear last Sunday's sermon, if you need a refresher as to what we have to rejoice about in the Lord, that thing is archived. You can go back and watch last week's sermon. It's really important because it talks about the crazy amount of love that Christ had for us in that he was willing to die for us. And so if you're questioning whether or not there's anything to rejoice about, go back and watch that sermon. But Paul says, rejoice in the Lord. Again, I'll say rejoice. To add emphasis, he says, I'm going to repeat this twice. So he says, in context, as you look at your life, and right now we look at our life, and you may be really, really bummed out about the Rona. Coronavirus has got some people really stressed and really upset. And some of you may not be as worried about it as others, but that's up to the individual, right? Some people worry and some people don't. That's okay. We're all wired differently. Some things scare some of you more than others. Some of you in here, not afraid of snakes. If you're wondering, does Stuart have the capacity to be violent? Come to me with a snake. There was a guy in school that found that out in the fourth grade. He had a green snake brought to school. The last thing he said before he lost consciousness was, it's not poisonous. You know what he found out? I was. And I jumped up and bit him because I don't want a snake near me. And you know what? If it's a dead snake, and you say, it's dead. Last thing you say, probably before you become dead. I don't like snakes. Now, some people go, that's an irrational fear. Okay. By the way, if you think stressed people hate being told not to be stressed, tell somebody with an irrational fear that their fear is irrational. By the way, any of you have irrational fears? Okay. I by the way, have a theory that no fear is irrational. If it's your fear, it's rational to you. Some people are afraid of heights. Some people are afraid of snakes. Spiders. Now I feel like we're getting in that scene from The Replacements. Bees. I'm scared of bees. You scared of bees, Monty? Oh, you're doing the movie. Yeah. By the way, if you haven't seen that scene in The Replacements, go home and YouTube that. That's hilarious. Bees. Quicksand. You know, if you ever watch Gilligan's Island, you're terrified of quicksand. We all have anxieties. We all have stresses and fears. What Paul is saying is what you have to do is you have to put aside all the things that you have anxiety about, and you have to focus on the Lord. And whatever else is going on in the world, whether it's politics you don't like or the coronavirus or whatever else may be going on, maybe it's some stuff going on with family, maybe there's some health issues, whatever is going on, Paul says you've got to take that stuff, you've got to put it all aside, and you've got to rejoice in the Lord. Because whatever else is happening in your life, whatever else is going on, you still have redemption, love, and forgiveness and acceptance by Jesus Christ. Whatever else is going on. He said, so really what you have to do on a daily basis, and this is a daily kind of thing. Paul says you've got to every day take time and set aside an opportunity to rejoice in the Lord. Now, for those of you who are going, well, that doesn't sound that hard. How many of you have ever been in a church service where people were not rejoicing? Now, let me ask you a question. If you can't rejoice at church, where are you going to? I mean, if you can't make it work here, it's probably going to be hard to do it anywhere else. You may say, well, you know, there's just a lot of stuff. And I've talked about this before. There's a lot of stuff in church, Stuart, I just don't like. Okay, focus on the stuff you do. But there's only one thing. Focus on that one thing. If the only thing you could focus on is the minute I say, I'm done, you're like, praise God. That's my rejoice moment. The sermon's over. Let's rejoice. If that's your moment, if that's all you got, We'll take it, you know, we'll take it. If there was only one song you liked this morning, man, you got to rejoice hard during that one song because I really don't like the rest of them. Okay, whatever. The point is, Paul says you got to rejoice in the Lord. You've got to set aside the stuff. And by the way, will life not always give you reasons to have anxiety and stress? There's always something. How many of you have a mortgage right now? Once a month, you got stress, right? Once a month, that you know that thing's coming. You can't focus on that stuff. He says, you've got to rejoice in the Lord. Now, if you think that Paul is being naive here, we're going to look at a passage from Acts chapter 16 this morning. This is verses 23 through 25. This is kind of a flashback to Paul's first visit to Philippi where this church is located. It says, when they had struck them with many blows. Now, if you're having trouble translating that, I will put that in the vernacular. When they had beaten them up, they threw them into prison and commanded the jailer to guard them securely. And he, having received such a command, threw them into the inner prison. That would be solitary, I'm guessing, solitary confinement. He threw them into the inner prison and fastened their feet in stocks. So you've got these stocks that are bolted into the ground, and they lock their feet in these things so they can't move, they can't stand up, they can't move. They're just fastened in place by the ankles. All right? So they're fastened with their feet in the stocks, and about midnight, Paul and Silas were praying and doing what? Singing hymns, and by the way, not Swing Low Sweet Chariot songs. See, and I think it's important that Luke specifically records here that they're singing hymns of praise, not woe is me. You know, they are singing hymns of praise to God, and the prisoners were listening to them. Now, if you're a prisoner in the adjacent cell and you hear these two guys who have just gotten beaten up and thrown in prison and fastened to the floor in these stocks, and all of a sudden they start singing hymns of praise, what are you thinking is going on? Oh, I know why they're in here. They're crazy. Them people got a demon. That's why they're in here. They're possessed. Maybe that drunken disorderly. I'm not really sure. But these people have been thrown in prison. Now, if you're Paul and Silas, how many reasons do you have to be angry that day? But by the way, Paul is a Roman citizen, right? Now, we don't know that Silas was, but Paul's a Roman citizen. How many of Paul's rights have been violated in this one incident? Well, number one, you can't beat a Roman prisoner without a trial first. So there's all sorts of things going on with Paul. So Paul and Silas are sitting in jail. They're chained to the floor. They've been beaten. They probably are in pain. And I don't know who, one of them says, you know what we should do? What? Let's have a worship service. Right now. That's a great idea. And so they start singing praises, okay? So it's important to note that the guy who's writing this text in Philippians, and sometimes we go, well, these guys just didn't understand. They don't understand. Understand that Paul had been in the circumstance, right? In that very city, he had sat in a prison cell at midnight, having been beaten up and chained to the floor. And Paul said, let's worship. Let's worship. All right, so let's go back to the Philippian text. All right, so he says, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I'll say rejoice. It is a choice of the will to decide to rejoice. And when you look at your life and go, I don't have a lot to rejoice about. If you're a Christian, you have forgiveness, salvation, and the love of Christ. At any time of the day, you have that to rejoice about, right? And whatever else is going on, whatever, maybe you've been watching Fox News and you're all mad about something. Maybe you've been listening to NPR on the way home and you're all upset. Maybe somebody cut you off in traffic. I'm sorry. You know, there's, like I said, life will give you a million things every day to be angry and frustrated and be anxious about. And Paul says, what you have to do is sort through that stuff and focus on God. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I'll say rejoice. Then he comes back with this. Let your gentle spirit be known to all men. How many of you would say from your social media footprint or your interaction with others, how many people do you think would identify you as a gentle spirit? Some of you are going, what do you mean by gentle? What do you mean by gentle? Now, I want to remind you that in that text we just looked at in Acts, when Paul and Silas begin worshiping at midnight, anybody remember what the last line of that passage was? And the prisoners were listening, right? People are watching. People are listening. People are paying attention. They are taking note of our behavior and our attitude and how we act. And whether you may be aware of it or not, people are watching you all the time. How many of you consider yourself a people watcher? When we were down in Florida a few weeks ago, we had a chance to go to Animal Kingdom. And I got to see every animal in Animal Kingdom except the ones I really wanted to see, which was the meerkats. The guide said, oh, it's too cold for the meerkats. Because it was like 60-something. The meerkats don't like it when it's that cold. So, like, there were two of them that stuck their head out the hole and looked around. But because I used to watch Meerkat Manor on Discovery Channel. I used to love that show. So I was disappointed to see the meerkats. But you know what I got to see instead of the meerkats? I got to see people at Disney World. And those are the most interesting critters of them all. There is nothing quite as fascinating as stopping for some ice cream or a cup of coffee and just sitting there and watching the wildlife walk by. And you just kind of sit there and you're like, whoa, that's probably a bad clothes choice for you, and this is fantastic, and How do you even do that with your hair? And man, I wish I still had hair. And you just sit there and you watch them go by and it's fantastic. And it's just, it's so enjoyable. And some of you are people watchers and you know exactly what I mean. You know, there's just nothing like watching people. The truth is people are always watching, right? We live in a world now where there's a camera on everybody's cell phone. And you just never know when somebody's filming you, which to me is absolutely terrifying. But that's the world we live in. We live in a world today where people are constantly watching us. How many of you have ever made a comment on Facebook and somebody responded to your comment that you didn't even know? Because they were friends of some friends of somebody who knew somebody who was in that post. And so you make a comment and then somebody you don't even know replies to your comment. You're like, I don't even know you. But do you realize when they click on your name, and it takes them to your page, if your page tells them that you're a Christian, you realize that all they got to do is click on your page and go, oh, this person says they're a Christian. And they just said this. You realize that's how simple it is? I had some fun with Steve. Steve put on Facebook last night that he had just filled out the Suddenlink customer survey. I know. Joey's going, you can't say that on the air. Huh? We're getting ready to get cut. We went to Facebook customer survey. Joey's going, you're getting us in trouble, Stuart. Can we go back and bleep that out? By the way, Steve said it was the most wonderful service he had ever received in all his life. And he was a really big fan of their fantastic work and customer service. Thanks a lot, Suddenlink, for all your hard work. And now we'll move on to the next point. I think I just, Joey, I think Joey almost passed out. He's like, oh God, no, don't, shh, quiet. And here's the funny thing. How did I know Steve had made a comment about that? Because Steve posted on Facebook, me and Steve are friends, and so my cell phone told me, Steve just made a comment. Stuart, you might want to check it out. This is how simple it is for people to see what we're saying and what we're doing and what our attitudes are about things. And so Paul says, look, make sure that everybody sees your gentle spirit. When are we most likely to be ugly to people? When we're angry or we're afraid, right? Fear and anxiety are the things that generally motivate us to be poorly behaved, to take out our frustration and our anger and our aggression and all the things that we're feeling that we're so bothered by and concerned about. And so those things motivate us. And so Paul says, look, it's really important for you Christians in Philippi, just like when myself and Silas, when we were singing hymns that night at midnight, the other prisoners were listening. They were paying attention to us. And what do you think they were wondering? Why are these guys singing praises to God? They just got beat up and thrown in jail. And what do you think was the question that was going through those guys' minds? What is it about their God that makes them worship him in a moment like this? And so Paul says, look, when we're out moving through our neighborhood and of course Paul didn't have social media, he probably would have loved it because he could have preached to people everywhere. But you know, as we look at our footprint and we see the things that we're saying and the things that we're doing and how people perceive us, we need to remember that we need to have a gentle spirit that's known to all people. Well, how do we have a gentle spirit? Well, Paul says it comes from rejoicing in the Lord always. He says, again, I'm going to say rejoice. Let your gentle spirit be known to all men. The Lord is near. Verse 6, be anxious for nothing. Oh, there's that verse. Be anxious for, oh, calm down. But I want you to listen to, because it's not as simple as Paul just saying, don't be anxious. He gives you a prescription, right? He says, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, and this is really important. He says, with what? Thanksgiving. I was reading an article one time this guy had written about prayer. And it was really interesting because he said that Christians have developed this really bad tendency to treat Jesus like a vending machine. That we walk up and we throw our quarter in and we pull a handle and we expect something back. And that's how we treat him. We're always asking him for stuff. And this guy asked a question in this article. He said, what percentage of your prayer life is asking God for something? Wow. And I started thinking about that. What percentage of my prayer life are prayer requests? If you had to make a graph this morning of your prayer life, however large or small it is, it's still a circle. If you were going to make a graph of your prayer life this morning, how big a chunk of the pie would be asking God for something? And I would guess for a lot of us in this room, it's probably well over 50%. We've got all these requests. We've got all these concerns. We're praying for this sick person. We're praying for our country. We're praying for this. We're asking for that. Lord, if we could just have good weather. Lord, don't mess up my vacation. Lord, let this happen. I got this sick friend. Heal them. Lord, be with these people. We're always asking for stuff. How much of your prayer life is thanks? Now, all you have to do to recognize how this thing works is if you've ever dealt with people that you've done a lot for them, but they never seem to say thank you, but instead they always are continually asking for more stuff. And if you've ever had children, you know how this works. You know, kid comes in the room and you're like, I know what you're here for. You have come to thank me. We have this running joke at our house. Where our son is concerned. And that running joke is no news is good news. Because if Caleb calls us from college, generally speaking, one of two things has happened. Either he's had a seizure and he has to let us know, or he's out of money. It's usually one of those two things. It is rare that he calls to go, hey, I just called to say, a little Stevie Wonder, I just called to say I love you. And I'm not going to sing that, because that'll probably get us in more trouble with Sudden Link than that story I was going to tell. That's just how he's wired. And by the way, he gets that honest, because I was the same way when I was in college. I rarely called my parents unless I needed something, because I was kind of independent that way, which they didn't think was independent. They just thought it was ungrateful. They would send me a check every week, and so I had some spending money, and I'd take it in cash. And rarely did I call and say, "Hey, I got your check. Thank you." Generally, when I called, what did it mean? I didn't get a check yet. What happened? We are sometimes people who do not pay much attention to saying thank you, and that is especially true with God. And so when Paul gives this prescription for how to deal with anxiety, one of the things he puts in there, he says, everything by prayer and supplication. Now, supplication means request. So he says, by prayers and requests, let your requests be made known to God, right? Let him know what's going on. But you need to include thanksgiving. Now, there's a twofold purpose in that. Telling God thank you is good for God because you're acknowledging your thanks. But here's the other thing. When you thank God for stuff, what does it do? What does that do for you? What does it do for you when you thank God for all the stuff you've got? It reminds you of all the stuff you've got. You guys remember that hymn, Count Your Blessings? Remember Count Your Blessings? See what God has done? If you sat down today and said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make a list of stuff that I have to be thankful for. How many of you could fill up probably 30, 40 minutes just writing stuff down you could be thankful for? Is it me? You know what I'm going to do? Here's what I'm going to write God a letter. I'm just going to write down everything I could be thankful for. Wow. Family, job, health. And some of you say, well, I'm not as healthy as I used to be, but you're still breathing. Health, job, it pays the bills. I got a car, live in a free country. You know, we could go down the list, right? And if we got really into the minor stuff, we got down into the minutia. Man, I'm thankful. We could make a really significant list. And if you got to the end of that list and you looked at this great long list of stuff you have to be thankful for, what are the chances you'd still feel anxiety about the things you don't have? And I would guess that the anxiety would lower. But the problem is that we don't think that way. We are wired to notice the things that we don't have more than the things we do. And so Paul says, look, when you go to God, if you're dealing with anxiety, he says, here's the thing. Be anxious for nothing. Go to God in prayer and supplication, but be thankful. Remember, before you start asking God for stuff, to thank him for all the stuff you've got. And when you do that, the anxiety begins to lessen. And like I said, this is not kind of a one-time thing where, you know, I'll do it one time and see if it works. This has to become habitual, right? Because what happens is when we do that, we live in a constant state of gratefulness. And you guys, everybody in this room has probably had a moment in your life where you became overly fixated on the thing that you wanted that you didn't have at the exclusion of all the stuff you had, right? We've all done it. We have become fixated on this thing that we want. And I can tell you from my own personal experience how easy it is to do this. I look at my own son, and I have been so ungrateful on so many occasions for his current health condition at the absolute expense of being grateful for the miraculous recovery he experienced. And it's not hard to do, right? It's not hard to do. Because we can, you know, because as a parent, what, you always want everything to be perfect for your kid, right? So I can look and go, well, he has these seizures occasionally. Man, they really upset me. I'm really upset with God because he could have done better. And if I talk to 100 people in the medical field, what does every one of them tell me? Your son is healed beyond anything you ever had a right or expectation to believe would happen. Nobody walks away from viral encephalitis as healthy as your son is. And yet, there are days when I look at God and shake my fist because it could have been better. And I think everybody in this room can identify with that on some level. We have had those moments where if you're God in heaven, you're going, really? Really, you're that ungrateful? Everything I've done, and all you can think about is that one thing you didn't get, which honestly, you probably didn't even really need. And actually, I knew better for you, because if I'd given you that thing, it might not have gone the way you thought it would. But this is a part of how we're wired. And so it's very easy for us to do this. And so Paul says, look, this has to be a discipline that you develop. When you go to God and you say, Lord, I have some requests today I'd like to make, but before I make them, let me take some time to thank you for the stuff that I have. That should be a discipline that everyone in this room aspires to. That we should never go to God with a request that we don't take some time to be grateful for all the stuff he's done. And Paul says, when you do that, when you develop that in your life, when you are constantly remembering in your prayers how much God has done for you, that anxiety begins to diminish. Anxiety begins to diminish. It's a discipline because we become reminded that God is always taking care of us. He's always taking care of us. He's always providing. And maybe he's not always providing in the manner that we'd like, but he provides. How many of you have ever walked into the kitchen, opened the refrigerator, seen a refrigerator full of food and said, there's nothing to eat here? Any of you ever done that? You open the closet, you open that little pantry door, and there's stuff on every shelf. You're like, not a thing to eat in this house. I've done that. I would guess most of you have done that. And I think sometimes that's how we treat God. We open up the door and see all the stuff he's given us. You know what we see? I don't have a thing to wear. Every husband in this room just went, I want to comment, but I'm not going to. When she walks in the closet and she's like, I don't have anything to wear. And you're like, there's $9,586 worth of clothes on that rack alone. 700 pairs of shoes, nothing for my feet. This is, right? I mean, you guys are laughing because you know it's true. Some of you know it's true. Now, I realize some of the men in here are divas and they're probably the same way. I give equal time to the men because I'm not sexist. There are some men like that. My problem is it just, my stuff fits anymore. I got plenty of stuff to wear if I could lose 40 pounds. You know, I'd have a whole new wardrobe if I could do that. But we understand how this works. It is so easy for us to look at the bounty in which we live. You guys have heard it. We live in the freest country in the world. How many of you have heard somebody complain about our freedoms in the last 6 months? We complain about our freedoms all the time. We still live in the freest country in the world. And it's completely obscured to us. It's completely obscured to us. And can you imagine what God thinks when he hears that? Really? I could have let you be born in any place. You want to see a country that's not free? I'll show you one. And he probably wonders, how ungrateful can you be? You're living in the freest place in the world and you're constantly griping about your freedom. And so Paul says, look, you've got to focus on these things with prayer and thanksgiving, make these things known to God. Now in verse 7, Paul ties it up by saying, if you begin to develop these disciplines, right? If you learn to rejoice in the Lord always, if you develop that gentle spirit, if you go to God with thanksgiving before you make your request, if you do all these things, listen to what's going to happen. He says, the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard your hearts and your minds in Jesus Christ. He said, guys, here's what happened. Here's how this works. God has this peace that you can't even comprehend. You can't even understand it. And by the way, how can Paul tell him this? Because Paul once sat in a prison cell where he could have been afraid for his life. He could have been angry and bitter at getting beaten up. He could have been complaining to God. This is, I serve you, I give my life to you, and this is how you treat me? You let this happen? Really? But through his own personal experience, Paul says, guys, I've experienced this peace. I have this peace. And it is beyond comprehension. I can't explain it. I can't tell you why I could sit in a prison floor, chained to the floor, after getting beat up and sing praise and worship to God. I can't really explain why. It's just, I have peace. Any of you ever seen somebody that just seemed to have more peace than it made sense to you? You go visit somebody. You know, I've had opportunities in the last 30-some years in ministry to sit with people who were terminally ill. And it is such an amazing contrast, those people who were so terrified of death and so afraid to die and so full of questions about what's going to happen, and those people that are like, I'm good, man. I'm good. Don't worry about me. Worry about my family. Look after my family when I'm gone. I'm okay. I'm at peace. And some people would look at them and go, how can you be at peace? How is that even possible? And that's what Paul's talking about. He said, there is a peace that God has that he wants to give you. He is the God of peace. He wants to give you this peace. He doesn't want you to be riddled with anxiety and frustration and fear. That's not what he designed you for. It's not what he wants you to be. He doesn't want you to look at the world you're living in right now and see coronavirus and see politics and see riots and see all these things going on. He doesn't want you to be consumed with anxiety and fear over that. What he wants you to be is a light to people who are consumed by anxiety and fear over those things. He wants people to come to you and say, how can you be at so much peace with all this craziness going on? And he wants you to be able to give an answer for your faith. Oh, guys, man, I've got peace in all this stuff. How? I can't explain it. It comes from God. I'm not worried. I mean, yeah, I worry about this stuff. I mean, I pray for my country. I pray that I don't get sick. And for the people who did, I pray for them. But I'm not consumed by anxiety and fear over these things because God gives me peace. I can't even explain to you how it works. I just can't explain it. But I'm at peace as I go through this world. And that's because it comes from God. Now, we all know people who don't like peace, right? We know people who love. You know, you just know people who if you ever know that person that wanted to be involved in everybody's drama? If their life didn't have any drama, they would go seek some out somewhere else because that's just kind of how they rolled. You know, you've known those people probably that they just have to be involved in some drama or they don't feel like their life is fulfilled. You know, you can't do anything about that. But Paul gives us a formula that we can apply and find a measure of peace in these crazy uncertain times. I don't know what my country's going to look like in 10 years. I don't know. I had a student ask me in class today, Mr. Woodley, you think there's going to be a civil war? You think this country's going to split? I said, the direction we're heading, a chance. I could see it happen. I don't know. I don't know. In 10 years, there may be the conservative states of America and the liberal states of America. I don't know. I don't know. California may run off and go do its own thing. Try not to weep too hard about that. You know, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't have any clue. I don't have a crystal ball. But I do know this. Whatever our nation looks like in 10 years, Christ still died for my sins. I'm still forgiven. I'm still redeemed. He still loves me. I don't know what my health condition is going to be in 10 years. I joke all the time that I'm the healthiest person in my house. And people look at me and go, that's sad. And I look at them and go, that's true. But it is probably true. I don't know what's going to happen to me. You know, in 10 years, I don't know what my health condition is going to be. I don't know what's going to happen to our church. I can't look in the future and tell you in 10 years, in 5 years. Shoot, I can't tell you what's going to happen in 10 minutes. But I can tell you this. Whatever happens in your life from the next moment forward has no bearing on who Jesus Christ is. Has no bearing on how much he loves you. The world's going to do what it does. Politicians are going to do what they do. The virus is going to run its course. And when it's gone, someday, there'll be another one. History tells us there'll be another one. There's always going to be some crisis. There's always going to be some thing. There's always going to be some problem. But the unchanging love of Christ is what Paul is talking about here. And by the way, how do we know it's unchanging? Because the things he writes about 2,000 years ago are still true today. If we learn to rejoice in the Lord, if we learn to look past all the craziness in our world and learn to focus on him and rejoice, if we learn to develop a gentle spirit that is a witness to other people, if we learn to go to God in prayer, but bring him our thanks as part of the process so that we're reminded of how much he's done for us. If we do all these things, we develop these into habitual things that they're part of our lives, I think the church will be less riddled with fear and anxiety and be more effective as people in this world look for something to believe in. We become that light. The praise team is going to come and lead us in our communion hymn this morning. It's a real simple truth, guys. I'm terrified of snakes. You know what's not going to make me feel something better? Somebody else who's as terrified of snakes as me. I'm not going to find any comfort from that person. I used to watch Crocodile Hunter. And I thought, you know, if that guy could do it, I could. And then I went, no, probably not. Probably not. You know what? I don't think God is going to take away my fear of snakes. It's a little late now. I'm 54. It's probably too late for that now. But you know what? Fear of snakes isn't my problem. Fear of tomorrow is a problem. And if you're here today, if you're watching online, and you live with this constant fear of the unknown, of what's going to happen tomorrow, what crazy direction is our country going to go, what terrible thing's going to happen next, I want to challenge you to take Paul's formula from Philippians 4 and apply it and see if God's peace doesn't make a difference in your life.